Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 12th, 2015. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Good. How are you doing?
Great, great, great. Well, D.R., climate change is a big issue for many people. It's a heartfelt issue for many people. And there has been some interesting articles written this past week, especially by a guy named Dave Roberts. Have you ever read anything by David Roberts?
Yes.
Of Grist?
He's a brilliant writer and shockingly, the soon-to-be former contributor to Grist, now going over to Ezra Klein's Vox site, and has just been a tremendous, tremendous writer who really put Grist on the map for the course of the past 10 years or so, and has just been perhaps, next to Joe Rome, one of the greatest writers on the climate issue.
Yeah, and I agree with you. He has consistently come up with things that make you rethink what you thought you were thinking. And so this week, he put up an article called Everybody Needs a Climate Thing. And the motivation for it was something that, I guess in last week's show, I pretty much threw the guy under the bus. But there's a gentleman named Jonathan Franzen who wrote an article for The New Yorker in which he talked about birds and Franzen's near obsession with birds as it related to the climate crisis. And Franzen basically was saying, I'd rather take care of the birds than solve the climate crisis. Dave Roberts did a very smart thing and basically generalized that idea to the following fact, that everyone has a deep motivation for why they think about climate issues. I mean, I know I've spent enough time thinking about this, DR. I think you have. But not everyone thinks about it at the 30,000 foot level. Not everyone makes a podcast each week talking about, what are the big picture. Other people have much more, they're concerned, but they're concerned about much more local things that are concern to them. And Roberts makes the argument that sometimes climate hawks, climate activists, appear to have a bullying tone, saying that everyone should be obsessed with climate all the time, and that Franzen is an example where guy cares about birds. I mean, secondarily about climate, and he doesn't want to be told how to take care of the birds.
Yeah.
Do you have any sense of that? I mean, I can see where it might be true, but
it was an interesting piece. My takeaway from it was that there, Roberts has made the point that. From a certain perspectives, and I would argue to certain people, climate is so broad and abstract of an issue that it's hard for them to have an in to the issue. But there are certain things that are for people tangible and things they see every day that can be their in to the issue. Right. And Roberts seemed to be making the point that, for friends and birds are his potential into this issue, and for other people, he mentioned the Keystone XL pipeline matter and this is something that not only David Roberts has mentioned, but that Jane Klebe of Bold, Nebraska has mentioned, that not everybody who opposes the Keystone XL pipeline is necessarily doing it because they're climate hawks, but their opposition to it for whatever reason has the effect of standing ground, so to speak, against the climate crisis. So that was the interesting part of this is my takeaway from David Roberts' piece, was that, there are people who can be right for the wrong reasons, essentially, that if they're fighting.
Well, against, right for as you state them, and I would state them, they're right for we think that the right reason is to stop climate change, but they have their own reasons.
If somebody wants to stop a coal-fired power plant because it's causing their kids asthma, even if they don't care about the climate change issue at all, they are, in effect, an ally to the climate hawk, basically.
And I think that, Dave Roberts' point is a good one, is that that the movement has to be a movement of climate-aligned groups that have an ultimate effect of addressing climate, even though the proximate thing that people focus on may or may not be a climate-related thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very interesting point of view. Mm-hmm. One of the great lines he has, but one of them is, every approach to climate is partial and blinkered, mm-hmm. Because climate is everything, of course, as we've argued, climate is everything, and thus it's more than any one particular thing. Mm-hmm. So if you and I talk about clean energy each week, right, mm-hmm. that's only a part of the issue, because someone else is worried about sea level rise, mm-hmm. and someone else, I mean, there are so many approaches to it that there is no single all-encompassing mandatory thing, mm-hmm. and that people that are working on less obvious climate things, I mean, people that are working on bike paths, mm-hmm. and stuff like that are doing climate things, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of just to put in a plug for MCAN, I think the Massachusetts Climate Action Network is a collection of groups that are all climate aligned. They each have their own project, oftentimes local project that they're working on. Some of them are very clearly climate aligned, and some are not so obviously, but they're all marching in the same direction, right? Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about this, especially in the context of some of the pieces that have been run on Grist and other similar websites about people in red states who are pushing for clean energy and pushing to expand access to solar, and they have all kinds of different views on the climate issue, and some of them don't care about it at all. Some of them have yet to be convinced of the scientific evidence and the threat, but they believe in the power of clean energy and how that advances, you know, a reduction of carbon pollution, even if they don't actually care about carbon pollution.
But I think many of those, my reading is that many of the people who in Tea Party, say the Green Tea Party people, they're mm-hmm. talking about liberation of the individual from corporate domination.
Yes,
so the Southern
yes.
company can't tell me what to do. I get to make my own energy,
exactly.
and that's my American right to be free.
Exactly.
And they're not worried about climate issues, mm-hmm. but on the other hand, it's a good thing. I mean, they're doing
exactly.
the right stuff, right?
Exactly.
But I mean, it is, I would ask everyone listening to take a moment and think what it is, what the emotional core of their connection to the climate issue is, because mm-hmm. everyone has one. Everyone, I mean, I know myself, I have been asked multiple times, you know, what's the fundamental reason. And that reason has evolved over the years now, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it tends to be something that, you know, when you finally get down to the base of it, this is the place where you began. This is where the penny dropped and you realize that there's a big issue. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, my explanation now, there's my son, there's all sorts of things, but I grew up at a place that was vulnerable to hurricanes. And
mm-hmm.
the idea that a hurricane, I mean, I knew that a hurricane could come through and wreak havoc in the course of a few hours and devastate a place.
Mm-hmm.
And that sticks with you when you start talking about severe weather events. So, I mean,
mm-hmm.
that kind of resonated with me. I mean, do you have an emotional core that you think of, you say, this is why I'm hanging around doing this stuff?
I think the thing that resonates with me is that when you read about the years prior to America's involvement in World War II and how there were Americans who knew about the atrocities that were going on in Germany, and yet they seemed to turn a blind eye to it. And you ask yourself, how could people morally turn a blind eye to those atrocities? And yet when you see the prospect of history repeating itself, that you know that there are going to be millions of people dying if something is not done, how can somebody with any sort of a conscience, with any sort of a moral core, turn a blind eye and say, oh, I really don't care? You'd have to be a sociopath not to care. So that's sort of my in, I would say.
Yeah, and I think that there are, I think it is a fruitful exercise for every climate hawk to look into her soul and figure out, you know, why am I doing this? Because that gives you some kind of sustenance when times get tough. Right? Exactly. This is why you're doing it, because, say, in your case, it violates this core ethical value that you must speak when you see an injustice going on, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, these are so. I think it's a useful exercise to know what your climate thing is and to have it accessible in times of need.
Exactly, like Michael McDonald said, it keeps you running.
It keeps you running. So then, last week, DR, we talked about religion and global warming. Very, fascinating thing. But then this week, sort of in connection with this Dave Roberts article about what's your climate thing, there was an article in The Guardian that talked about a connection between climate change and evangelism. And the thing that caught me initially in reading the article was this line that said, of course, talking about climate change and how difficult it is to get people to think about climate change. It says, after all, as psychologists point out, it is notoriously hard to mobilize people around issues that are invisible, uncertain, set in the future, and require them to make sacrifices. Mm-hmm. That sounds like the climate change issue, but it also sounds an awful lot like religion.
Yeah.
It's that it's all, you know, you can't really put your hands on it, but still in all, people are deeply committed to a religious belief, and that comes from a sense of conviction and almost an epiphany moment that people have about religion. And the argument, I think, of the article, at least my take on the article, is that once you accept the science, right, which is stands in its own right, this sort of emotional commitment to the topic is somewhat akin, I guess the point of the article is that climate hearts can learn from evangelists who provide a supportive network so that people can grow to the point where they can publicly declare their commitment to a religion or to addressing the climate change issue. And I just thought, I mean, it's basically back to this core of what makes you tick. Why do you keep doing it? Did you get a chance to look at the article, or do you think it was crazy, or what's your take on it?
I saw the article, but I honestly, I didn't see that much merit to it, because I don't think that one can be galvanized on behalf of science the way one can be galvanized on behalf of religion. I think there's simply two dramatically different things, and I think that in terms of generating strong political and moral and cultural activism in terms of an issue of science is so dramatically different from something in terms of religion that I think that George Marshall, the writer of that piece, quite frankly, I know he's a good writer, but I think with this particular piece, I think his reach exceeded his grasp, basically. And I just don't think that the piece worked, at least not for me.
Well, I have a feeling. I have a feeling that people need to have the epiphany moment for many reasons, because this is going to be a long haul. One of the quotes I'm quoting a lot of people in these shows, but he says, this is Marshall, the author of the article. It says, because environmentalists do not recognize conviction, we do not recognize despair or grief. We have contempt for doubt, and no one is ever at hand to walk through it together. We expect people to deal with their hopes and fears in isolation, constrained by a socially policed science, and given no encouragement other than a few energy-saving consumer choices and the odd petition. Nor is there any discussion of forgiveness for ourselves and our forebears. I mean, part of the issue is that, I mean, I've spent my life consuming carbon. Right? What do I do with that?
Yeah.
You know? So, I don't know. I don't know, DR.
Can you repeat the line where you said that you said that environmentalists didn't recognize conviction?
Yeah.
That line has to be questioned. I mean, come on. Bill McKibben doesn't have conviction. Gore doesn't have conviction.
But you can ask, why does Al Gore and Bill McKibben, why are they committed? What was the moment that changed them? When did they say, oh my God, this is like the most important thing I can do with my life?
Well, I think specifically with Gore, it was. I think he was a student of, I believe, the late climate scientist Roger Revelle, and Roger Revelle was the person who sort of kicked off that recognition. And I remember an old piece. I think it was McKibben being galvanized by the Jim Hansen testimony in Congress as something that sort of woke him up. So again, to say that they don't have conviction or that conviction can't be recognized is bizarre. That's a bizarre suggestion on the part of Marshall.
I guess, yeah, maybe. But even with McKibben and Gore, you and I, we kind of have this idea of where it all began. Mm-hmm. And I think most people, most climate hawks do have that idea. And it's good for them to try and figure it out because, mm-hmm. you know, what do they say? Know thyself. First of all, know thyself.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, if anyone gets to read that George Marshall article out there among our listeners, please let us know whether you think DR is right or I'm right, whether mm-hmm. the guy was talking through his hat or whether he made sense, right? That's George Marshall in The Guardian. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. So we've got to leave it there, DR. We'll tell our listeners that they can check out links to most of what we discussed at our blog. It's a WordPress blog, massclimateaction.wordpress.com. Of course, you can leave a comment there. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can listen to us there, share our show. It's all a good thing. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher. You can find us on iTunes, searching for Massachusetts Climate Action Network. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. DR, thanks as always for being here.
Thank you.
And thanks to everyone for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.